We're going to start at the beginning of the Parsha, all the way at the beginning. This week we are reading Parshas Korach. So I missed Shlach, I missed a week. Actually, when I was preparing, I sat down, and then I knew I had skipped a week, and like I was preparing, and then after a few minutes I realized I was preparing Shlach, and then went back. We've got the very beginning. We're told Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kas ben Levi. So Korach takes himself something. V'dasan v'aviram b'nei Eliyah v'on ben Peles b'nei Reuven. Right. So Dasan Aviram join him. On ben Peles joins him. I'm not going to spend time exactly on the crew that he brings with him. Vayakumu lifnei Moshe. Okay, so and they stand before Moshe. Okay, so he gathers up not just apparently these leaders the people who are leading this movement, right? Which is him, Dasan, Aviram, right? So they name individual people that are with him, but not only that, they apparently end up with 250 people who are backing Korach during this, right? Well, we refer to this rebellion. Okay. Vayikahalu al Moshe v'al Aaron, and they gather before Moshe and Aaron. Okay, so the complaint that they come to Moshe with. So how does that go? Vayomru alehem, they say to them, okay, so they say to Moshe and to Aaron, Rav lachem, you have too much. Ki kol ha'ida kulam kedoshim, because the whole nation is holy, uvisocham Hashem, and Hashem is among them. Hashem is here with everybody. Umadua tisnasu al kal Hashem. So why are you raised above everybody else? Right? Why are you more important than everyone else? Why are you? Why did you take so much for yourselves if we're all holy? Vayishma Moshe, and Moshe hears that, Vayipol Apanav, right? And he falls on his face, right? So that's really the complaint of Korach is this one sentence. This one sentence, Rav Lachem, Ki Kol Eida Kulam Kadoshim, everybody's Kadosh, everybody's holy. Ubisocham Hashem, and Hashem is among all of us. So Madua Tisnasu Al Kal Hashem, why are you, why did you separate yourself from everyone else? Why do you think you're more important than anybody else if we all have that? So, Rashi elaborates, what is Kulam Kedoshim, right? We're all holy. So, we might say, Korach, what's your evidence that that's the case, right? What do you mean everyone's holy? How do you know everybody's holy? Korach, what are you referring to? So, Rashi says, Kulam Kedoshim, Kulam Shamu Devarim B'Sinai Mipi HaGvura. Everybody heard God at Har Sinai.
Everybody.
Heard God at Har Sinai. Right, Moshe, what do you think makes you special? Right, you didn't have some special revelation. Right, you weren't the only one at Har Sinai. We were all there.
Doesn't he realize that Moshe went up for 40 days, and he was? And they only heard the first two, and then the whole Kahal
okay.
Had to tell Moshe, you go and get the rest and bring it down. I mean, it's,
okay. So there's more to elaborate on, right? But to some extent. Right, this is a revelation that was unique, that hadn't happened before, right? Hasn't really happened since. Everybody was a part of it. Kol Eida Kulam Kedoshim. Everybody heard Hashem at Har Sinai, and that's Korach's problem, right? I can show you, Moshe. I can show you that everybody we know everybody has spoken to God. So if everybody's spoken to God, so then. Right, what sets you apart from everybody else? You're already starting to address because the issue I think an overall issue to deal with is right. Why is Korach wrong? Right, Korach seems to come with an argument. His argument is Kol Eida Kulam Kedoshim. Everybody's holy. Is it not true? Right, Kol Eida Kulam Kedoshim. Everybody's holy.
But the answer is this is what God wanted.
Okay, so if part of his argument is everybody's holy, which seems to be a fact, everybody heard God at Har Sinai, which is a fact, right? So why are you in charge of everybody else? So one approach to the argument might be like, in Echanami, all of the things that you've said so far, right? We accept. We accept all of your premises, but I'm in charge anyway, because God said I'm in charge. Right? So, okay, so it could be.
Who let him out? Who did everything up until now?
Okay, but again, does that mean that, so he did that up until now, and then they all had the same revelation at Har Sinai. So then they're all, at this point, now they're all the same.
If Korach decides he wants to be in charge, then you have the same question on him.
Okay, so
you have no leader, then you can't have a leader.
Yeah, so, okay, so, potentially. So there's a little bit of a discussion within right, which is like what is Korach's end game, right? Like what is he actually trying to achieve at the end? We're not going to differentiate between this as much, but some of the Mefarshim, right, are trying to differentiate. Is there a difference between what Korach himself wants or thinks versus what he has convinced the other 250 people about, right? Is he a leader who has his own agenda, but he like has to, you know, he convinces this whole crew to go with him. They don't want the same thing he wants. He wants power for himself, but what they want is something different, and he like kind of gives them the message that they want to bring them along, or perhaps not. Maybe right. Maybe he's making an argument that everyone finds very convincing.
The Gemara, every once in a while, we have a statement. I forgot exactly how it goes, but the words are missing from the Mishnah.
Oh yeah, but Ikar Chaser Min Sefer, like that kind of
Chaser Mechzer. This is not. This can't possibly be everything that Korach said to Moshe.
Right. Okay. So there's more to reading the Chumash that when we talk about the different like layers and levels within the text of the Chumash, that like this is in some way some succinct summary of the conversation, which encapsulates everything that was said, but there's more to this conversation as when Rashi elaborates on bringing the taluses and like the different parts of the conversation that are embedded within this pasuk, but there's more to it.
I mean, as you alluded to, you're bringing the 250 people. He didn't just say come and they all came. You
know, there's the talking and the riling up and the. And the speeches, right? The megaphone that he has. I don't know that he's getting everybody to go along. So this argument that he makes, right? The way it looks is right. Kol eidah kolam kadoshim. Everybody's holy, and everyone's like, yep, that's okay, true, check, right? Ubisocham Hashem. Okay, God is here, check. Umados tisnasu al kol Hashem. Hey, you're right. So then, why is that? Why is Moshe more in charge than anybody else? Is it just because all of those things that you've said are true, but Moshe's in charge anyway? Is that how it works?
Yeah, but God spoke to Moshe.
And God spoke to all of them. Oh. Right? So that's part of his argument. That's what Rashi spells out is Kulam Kedoshim, everybody's holy. Everybody heard God at Har Sinai, right? Like God spoke to the entire nation. So if that's the case, and if everybody can accept all of those premises, everybody accepts those pieces, so then why is there the conclusion that Moshe is in charge? Is it just, again, it's just a technicality, just like somebody has to be in charge, and God picked Moshe. So that's part of the question to deal with when dealing with, you know, the rebellion of Korach. One approach to looking at his question is, at the end of the day, why is Korach wrong? Right? Is Korach wrong, or do we say everything Korach said is correct, but he wasn't allowed to rebel anyway? Or is there something about Korach's argument that actually is incorrect? Okay, so that's the one. The first overall question is what's actually, is there anything wrong with Korach's argument? Is there something that's missing from what Korach said that we actually don't accept what Korach said? We actually think that Korach is missing something.
I have a question.
Yeah, question.
Did Hashem tell Moses when he picked Moses at the burning bush that he was going to take the people out of Egypt and take them to the promised land?
right.
to Eretz Yisrael.
So part of Moshe's mission is so continues not, through that.
He's not yet finished with that mission.
Okay.
So therefore, that's why he's in charge.
Okay. So Moshe's job started at the Sinai, you're suggesting, right? And part of the mission, the complete mission, is to take them out and to bring them to the land. And therefore, he's still in the middle. So he's just in the middle of his job. So your response to Korach is, Korach, essentially you're correct, right? But Moshe's in the middle of a job. And when Moshe completes his job, so then he'll step back and then he doesn't need to be in charge anymore, right? Like once Moshe happens to be in charge because he's in the middle of this mission that he's going on. But at the end of the day, once that's finished, so then we don't necessarily need Moshe.
And also, in previous Parshiot, wasn't it this holy people who complained about...
okay, so there's...
This, that, and the other...
Yeah, thing? So there are some complaints along the way. Okay, so, but... do they necessarily have needed Moshe in order to solve those problems? Is okay. But I think that the way that we address the... Right? I mean, we may have answers, but I think that it's important that we recognize that, like, the way we respond, right, makes certain assumptions about what is, you know, what is the case, and how much of what Korach saying is something we can accept versus not. So even if we do have an answer, I think we have to, like, kind of hold it up and, like, look at it just to understand exactly what we also are saying. Okay, so let's put that aside for right now. So that general question of how much of what Korach said, how much of what he said is seems to be correct, how much of what he said is true, and how much is not? How much is he actually kind of missing the boat?
It's interesting that he involves somehow Dasan and Aviram. They seem to.
Yeah. Yeah, so the leadership, right, Dasan Aviram and Own Ben Peles, and Dasan Aviram do come up again later, right? We know Own does not, but you know the difference is not just, you know, I mentioned the differences between Korach and the 250 people. Even within the leadership of this group, Korach's agenda may not be the same as Dasan and Aviram, who have a history of starting things up and argue with Moshe. So that you know, even within that tight group, things may not be. They may not all be exactly on the same page. So it is something to think about also in terms of who's actually involved. In source three, we have if we're going to solve part of this comes from Korach's, pointing to Har Sinai, right? He says, as Rashi said, Kulam Shamu Devarim B'Sinai Mipiakvur, everybody heard God speaking at Har Sinai. So I want to look back at some of the psukim when it came to Har Sinai. And it says, "Vayal Moshe el Hahar." Moshe went up on the mountain. Vayichas ha'anan es Hahar, and the cloud covered the mountain. Okay, so Moshe is up there.
Going up.
Yeah, so Moshe is going up on the mountain. Okay, vayishkon kvar Hashem al Har Sinai. Vayichaseu ha'anan sheishes yamim. So Moshe, the Kvod Hashem, or some revelation of Hashem, the presence of Hashem is on Har Sinai, and the cloud covers the mountain, the cloud covers it for 6 days, and then on the seventh day it calls out to Moshe. Okay, Hashem calls out to Moshe, mitoch ha'anan. Umar'ei Kvod Hashem, ke'isho cheles berosh ha'har. Okay, so now this Kvod Hashem, this presence of Hashem, is on the mountain. It calls out to Moshe, and it is now revealed to everybody. Umarei Kvod Hashem Keish Ocheles Barosh Ahar Le'enei B'nei Yisrael. So to the eyes in front of everybody, this Kvod Hashem is revealed to everybody. So what is revealed? The Kvod Hashem Keish Ocheles Barosh Ahar. This presence of Hashem Keish Ocheles, like a burning fire. So it, like a burning fire, it is revealed before everybody in the nation. So what are we picturing? What are we picturing? So there's a cloud, and now the Kvod Hashem reveals to everybody. So what happens? There's a cloud, and then it's Keisho Cheles. So the way it sounds, is is that there's a cloud. The Kavod Hashem is in the cloud. And then everybody sees this burning fire. Everyone sees a fire on the top of the mountain. And that's their experience of Hashem. So it's pointed out, Rav Mecklenburg and Haksav HaKabbalah points out, he has an issue with that. He has an issue with that reading of the Pasuk. Of all the times, right, one of the foundations, one of the Ikari Emunah, is that Hashem doesn't have a form. Right? Hashem doesn't have something we can look at. There isn't a physical expression of God. And all of a sudden, within the context of the revelation at Har Sinai, now we're told, okay, by the way, it looked like a big fire. What does that mean? What does that mean, it looks like a fire? We're supposed to picture that God looks like a fire? How could it possibly be that in these psukim of the revelation of Har Sinai, you know, the foundation of the Jewish people, that that it's describing what God looks like? God looked like a fire to everybody.
Father of Mecklenburg, that Hashem speaks to Bnei Yisrael?
So whenever we talk about Hashem speaking, so you have to figure out what does speaking mean. So in the context of Nevuah, right, this is already an ancient question when we talk about speech.
This the same, isn't this just another aspect of this is how we can interact with the divine?
Okay.
And whether it's, you know, this voice that really isn't his voice, or whether it's a fire that really isn't him, this is how we can interact with the divine.
It's all the anthropomorphic? Is that what?
Anthropomorphic? Anthropomorphic.
Mentions of God in the Torah. I mean, it's...
Right, so
how we can describe it.
So that happens to be a long saying discussion in exactly like what how are we supposed to read any, you know, anthropomorphic statement itself is a long discussion, right? Like that is a question of like when we say that, like what do we mean? And when we talk about Yad Hashem in the context, right, as like a great example, right? When we talk about like Yad Hashem, we never mean that, like, it looks like there's, like, a hand reaching out that does something, right? That's never what it means. So when we talk about Hashem doing something or like, a turn of phrase that sounds like Hashem has some sort of form, right, what it means is never, like, a thing that you can actually look at. It is a concept. So here, when we say it looked like a big fire to everybody's eyes, right, it looked like a big fire, right, and it sounds like le'enei b'nei Yisrael, in front of everybody. So now it sounds like we're literally describing like a thing, right? And if it's not a thing, if it is a concept, a function, so like what is it? What is that function? Right? So we're using our general approach to the Chumash as an important like tool. Like we know how to read Chumash in general, and we know what these ideas mean in general. So now how does that work here? Because the way it sounds, that's right? The way it sounds is a fire.
That's why they have the cloth. You know, before the word Aish, they could have just wrote Aish
Ochelet. Oh, okay, great. Okay, so maybe we're getting somewhere that it's he appears Ke'ish Ochelet. He appears like a fire.
Yeah.
So again, I think in the classic reading, right, the way we might just straight read through, it means he appears like a fire because obviously we know God is not a fire, right? But in this case, he revealed himself like a fire.
Like,
but the fact.
Oh,
okay. So it has like hints of the sneh. So that's why there we might want to read it as something like visual, something like that, because it is almost, right, as was mentioned before, right? This is like some on this process, but like Moshe started with a fire, and now the people are starting with a fire. So maybe there's something to it being a fire. But Rav Mecklenburg is not content to say that like it almost sounds like they're describing something that they're looking at. Seems very strange in this context. And in order to understand what this phrase Ke'ish Ocheles, what is the concept that we might be trying to get at, right? If it's not a thing that they're looking at, so then what does it mean that it's Ke'ish Ocheles, that it's like a fire? In what sense is their revelation like a fire? If they're not looking at something, right? In what sense is it Ke'ish Ocheles? It's like a fire if it's not something that they're actually looking at. Okay. So so the Medrash in Shmos Rabbah is going to use a pasuk that may be familiar to us. So this pasuk in Tehillim, Kol Hashem Bakoach, Kol Hashem Behadar. Okay, so this is in the Perek of Tehillim. Now we say, you know, throughout Shabbos, we say it in Kabbalah Shabbos, Kol Hashem Bakoach, Kol Hashem Behadar. So you have this Kol Hashem that comes up a bunch of times in this Perek. The Medrash comments, Ilu haya kasuv kol Hashem bekocho, lo haya ha'olam yachol la'amod. It says the voice of God, kol Hashem bakoach. So God's voice was powerful, bakoach. It was power. Kol Hashem bahadar, and the voice of God was hadar, was magic, you know, majestic and beautiful. So the Medrash points out, excuse me, that it doesn't say Kol Hashem b'kocho, that God's voice revealed His power. It doesn't say that God's voice came out b'kocho, because if it was b'kocho, if it was in the power of, if it was God's power, then lo haya olam yachol lamod. The world couldn't survive. The world couldn't make it if Hashem revealed, you know, His true power. Ela Kol Hashem b'koach. Rather, it was God's revelation was in koach. B'koach shall call echad ve'echad. It was really the koach of each and every individual person. Each person, Hashem's koach, Hashem's power was contained, right? So that not the world wasn't wiped out, but that each individual person was able to experience it. So it's the koach of every single individual person. That was the Maimon Har Sinai. The experience of Har Sinai was not one of kocho. It was not God's ultimate koach. It's not His ultimate power, but it was actually the koach shel kol echad ve'echad. Okay, that was the experience of Har Sinai. Okay, so what does that mean? So in Haksav v'Kabbalah, okay, so he elaborates on this idea. So he says, v'chalila lanu. Lehagshin kavod Hashem el dvar gashmi. Right, chas shalom. Right, God forbid that we should be magshim. Right, like we should make God physical. Lehagshim would be to be physical. Right, that we are going to describe God in physical terms. Aval ba lehodia ich haya hapela hagadol hazeh. Shazachu bo kol Yisrael yirosas kavod Hashem. But the pasuk is coming to tell us how it could be that the entire nation was zocha. How could the entire nation experience what they actually saw, what they actually experienced? Again, I don't want to know if I want to use the word saw. That everybody could have had this experience of Hashem. Shehu inyan nifla gam l'shar hanaviyim. Because for any navi, the experience of prophecy is a huge, grand, giant experience. Velo zachu eleha, rak achar she'ivareim nizda'azeu, v'kochos gufeim kishlu v'nechshelu v'nechleshu bahem. Right? Other nevi'im, it's not such a simple thing for a navi to get it. Right? The experience of nevuah, it completely takes over the body. It weakens the body. It's something where they collapse. It's something that is a very physically taxing experience. You know, that not every Navi, first of all, he doesn't point that, right? Not everybody becomes a Navi, right? Not everybody can just automatically, you know, get prophecy, as we saw in Baal Oscha, right? Different than everybody else, right? Moshe has a unique connection. Whenever he wants, he can have a conversation with Hashem. So to begin with, just to have a Nevuah is not really a given. And the experience of Nevuah is something that is that's very extreme. Kemo shekasov be'Avram, ima chashicha gedola nofeles alav. Right, that when Avram has a Nevuah, it describes this great fear, this great darkness that overcomes him. V'Daniel amar, hodi nepach alay lamashkes v'lo atzarti koach. Right, so, and Daniel also has, the way he describes the Nevuah of something that's like so shocking and something that's so, that takes over him. Umanish tanabah maimad hazeh. So what was What made Maamad Har Sinai different, right? How did everybody experience this thing that was apparently so difficult that Nevi'im throughout time, when they talk about Nevuah, they describe how shocking the experience is, but everyone else was able to do it, right? Everyone at Har Sinai managed to do it. So how could that be? That's what the pasuk is trying to tell us. It's not telling us what they saw, but it's trying to explain how could it be that everybody had a revelation at Har Sinai when most Nevi'im seem to collapse under the pressure of a Nevuah. V'lazeh baha bikra lehodienu, ki be'emes lo heitza kol ha'uma shava m'madregas hasagazo. The pasuk is coming to tell us that not everyone was actually equal in their revelation at Har Sinai. Not everyone actually had the same experience at Har Sinai. As David phrases it, right, later on, when David is writing Tehillim, he describes, he is pulling out this idea from the pasuk. Rak kol echad mehem hisig v'ra'a b'ayin ruchaniyuso. Right, be'ein ruchaniyuso mimara haruchanis asher lefana mikvod Hashem Yisbarach. So everybody with their intellectual, spiritual experience, they saw, again, here is not seeing in a physical sense, but here is a seeing in an intellectual, spiritual sense. So everybody experienced Kvod Hashem, lefi erech hachanaso b'shlemus nafsho. Everybody experienced Kvod Hashem in line with their own personal perfection, their own experience, their own spiritual state. To that extent, that is the extent to which they experienced God. Kimi shehaisa hachanas nafsho muetes uketana lahasaga ruchanis.
According to their preparation.
Yeah. Yeah. So to the extent that they were prepared themselves, so that is the experience that they had.
Did Moshe Rabbeinu use the word hachana during for the 2 or 3 days that they were supposed to get ready for Maamad Har Sinai? Is that a word that's used there? Because if it is, it fits perfectly. Those people who use those days to really be making themselves for the, for the revelation got more out of the revelation. But I don't remember whether.
I don't remember if that's the word that's used. I'm blanking on it right now. I think the broader idea, right, is something that, like, I'll say like this, that, like, we talk about the Sefiras HaOmer, right, the counting from Yetzias Mitzrayim until Maamad Har Sinai as a time of preparing for Har Sinai and preparing ourselves to receive the Torah, and That's not just like an idle, like a cute idea, like a nice thing, but like no, like literally that time when they were experiencing it, to the extent that someone made the most of Sefiras HaOmer, that change, that was their Maamad Har Sinai was actually different. So even though we talk about Har Sinai and we know that everybody has a unique that. As a nation, it is a unique experience. It is a prophecy that had not existed, right, to an entire nation. But that doesn't mean that everybody actually has the exact same nevuah, the exact same experience at Har Sinai. Even at Har Sinai, it depended on each person.
And maybe that's why now Korach came out, because maybe his experience, because of the background of who he was, wasn't as high as other people's experiences. Maybe this is him lashing out.
Oh, so maybe Korach knows that. Maybe Korach can really recognize that. I just want to close this Haksav HaKabal because I want to spell out when he says that that's Keish Ocheles. I just want to like spell out that's the way he wants to read this pasuk. That the Kvod Hashem. Umare Kvod Hashem Keish Ocheles Le'enei Bnei Yisrael. It is Hashem is revealed Keish Ocheles. So Rav Mecklenburg says it doesn't mean that God looks like a fire. It means God reveals Himself as a fire burns, like a burning fire. How does fire burn? So if you watch, how does it catch on to different things? So as it spreads, it catches differently. Some faster, some things it jumps to right away, some takes a little longer to burn, some really completely burn and some don't. So he says this phrase, ke'ish ocheles, is not describing the what, it's describing a how. It's describing how the nevuah passes through the people. The nevuah passes like a fire as it spreads over the people, different for each person, right? The fuel for the fire, the individual people, is actually, because they are unique, the experience also is unique. So that is how he reads this phrase of Keisho Chelas.
So is the English translation as a consuming fire? Is that an accurate English translation to Keisho Chelas?
Yes, but as, right, this question of as or like, right, has different, is right, when we're saying it is like this, in what way is it like that, right? So the way we might normally assume is it looks like this, but he's saying that's not the way to read it. It passes like a fire, right, meaning that it burns across the people the way that a fire would burn across to the horizon. So he says this experience. So there is a uniqueness to Har Sinai, right? There is something that everybody experiences, and there is an experience of Har Sinai that we haven't experienced in the same way. And the fact that everybody was able to experience it is very special, right? Everybody was there, and everybody has it. But on the other hand, it to say that we were all at Har Sinai and therefore we're all the same is also not exactly accurate, right? So on one hand, it is true. It is true that we all had revelation at Har Sinai, and right, they were able to become Nevi'im when there are plenty of people throughout history who are not able to become Nevi'im, right? So there are plenty of people who possibly were deserving of Nevuah, right? And weren't able to become Nevi'im. Right, so that is true. They kulam shamu devarim besinai mipi agvura. Everybody was able to have, first of all, a nevuah, potentially a unique kind of nevuah in terms of hearing it from Hashem. But on the other hand, on the flip side, we might actually argue, though, that everyone was not exactly the same. Everyone was not exactly the same. So
you think that people, according to Reb Mecklenburg, that people were aware that not everybody was the same?
So this is a question. This is a little bit of a question. I'm not 100% sure. The question is, does everybody, right, when it finishes and then they look at the person next to them, do they all think that they had the same nevuah?
I mean, because if they did, that's right. More of a basis for Korach.
Right. So that's why I think one way to apply this to Korach as we're building this is everybody comes out of it and everybody thinks that they all just had the same experience, and therefore they eventually, when Korach starts riling them up, then they're like, yeah, look at that. We all were there. We all did have this experience, and that may actually be Korach's point, right? The fact that that everybody comes out of this and they don't really understand the experience of their neighbor, so they think maybe we did all hear the exact same thing, right? We did all hear mi pi ha-gvura, right? Because so one way to read that would be that they don't necessarily understand the uniqueness of their own personal experience, and they're kind of seeing it as the broad experience of everybody, and therefore they are swept up with Korach. In order to do that, I think there is a slightly different way to say it, where you don't necessarily have to assume that, but it might still be very convincing to say even if we didn't all have the exact same one, right? We all hit a certain threshold that's different than Avraham, different than what Daniel will experience, right? Like they did in some way all have an experience which does seem to be beyond what other people had. So if we've all hit a certain threshold, maybe then like right. then at that point, like, what's the difference between everybody? Even though maybe they recognize to some extent.
I mean, 250. I don't know how many Nisi'e Eda there are, but 250 is a small percentage of
people who are
600,000 people. So, you know, a lot of people realized that wasn't what he was doing was not correct.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So figuring out, like, you know, he does come with a whole group, but recognizing also that, like, maybe most people really do get it, and there are some people who don't. And you're pointing out also this phrase Nisi'e Eda. Also, when the Torah uses the word Nasi, we also have to kind of keep track of that. Right? Rashi kind of points it out when it does. But, like, whenever the Torah uses the word Nasi, does Nasi mean the same, like, group every time, or does it not? Right? Like, that they are the princes. Are they the princes? They are some princes, right? So, like, you kind of have to keep track of that, because Rashi and the other Mepharshim also, they might not necessarily have the exact same reading. But you're just pointing that out. So just making a note of that as well. Okay, so this group, apparently, so at the very least, this group finds it very convincing that when Korach says, right, even though maybe the vast majority of people, but it's enough of a group who do think that that perhaps either they all had the same experience, or had enough of an experience that Moshe is not really that different than them. And that's really what they're coming with Korach about. And they say, we've already reached it, right? Like, we've already reached this level. We've already gotten there. So once we've already gotten there, why do we need you? And this idea, this perspective that we might have, right? When we look at our abilities, at something that we've achieved, do we look at this level that we are at, and we say, I'm there, like I've gotten there, it's already finished, or do we recognize that this is part of a process? I'm actually not there. I've reached something. I've reached the beginning of something. But there's actually more to it, and there's actually further for me to go. I am not at, you know, the pinnacle of what I should be or what I can be, but actually there's more room. There's actually more space to keep going. There is an idea that's referred to as mindset. That's like that's the book. If you look at there's a book by Carol Dweck called Mindset, based on years of research around what she points to as, you know, they put it as a little bit of a binary, right? Just in simpler terms, right? There are two kinds of mindsets that we might have about our abilities. I gave you, not from the book, but from a more recent article that kind of drew from the ideas, drew from her research to apply it in a new setting. You can see in here that there are two kind of perspectives that we might have. There's a fixed mindset. A fixed mindset is our when somebody possibly implicitly thinks that our abilities are set and they are what they are, and they're, you can't really change them, right? It's usually talked about in terms of intelligence. That's where a lot of the the pushing through in this in the research came in education largely, and it had to do with people's perceptions of their own intelligence. So there are some group of people who have a fixed mindset, and they think, however smart I am, like, that is a thing that came with me. That is a thing that I was born with, and that is just my intelligence. And you can't really make make that big of a change in your own intelligence. And there are others. There's another group of people who have a different perspective. They have what's called a growth mindset. They have a perspective of actual that what they've reached until now has been part of a process, and that process continues, and that you can actually change. You can actually make growth in your own levels of intelligence. And these two mindsets, these two perspectives, lead to different behaviors. They lead to different interactions with the world, right? So those those students, there's like a classic kind of example, is that they talk about that students with a fixed mindset, so if you are as smart as you are, and that's just kind of the end of it, so then you want to take on challenges that are just enough that you can accomplish them, but not really any harder, because once you hit something that's harder than you can handle, then you're only going to reveal that you don't know stuff, right? All you can do is show where you've like hit the peak, and then you stop. So there's no reason to like push further and try to get more or to take on harder problems, because you're just going to show people, you're going to demonstrate that you're actually not as smart as you want people to think you are. But those with a growth mindset will actually continue to take on continuously more difficult problems, and even until they hit points where they actually can't accomplish the goal, because they see this as part of the process of continuing to grow. And therefore, both that also leads to them continuing to actually learn more, right? They push themselves into areas where they cannot yet accomplish. And that is part of the process of growth. That itself is part of continuing to grow. So these two ideas of a perspective that, you know, kind of like I've hit it, I've already kind of like hit my peak, this is as good as I'm going to be. Or do we realize that it is all part of a process? It's all part of where I am now is part of a process, and that itself continues. Is it something that I am, or right? I don't know if they use this phrasing, but I think it helps for me a little bit to think like, right? Is it a trait? Right? This thing is a trait. It is a thing that is true about me. This is a fact about who I am, or is it a state? Right? That's another term we use: a trait or a state. The trait is like an ongoing thing that is true about me. And a state is, this happens to be the situation right now. This is kind of the state that I'm in right now, but that also changes. So those are the two perspectives. So it was, again, kind of brought up originally in intelligence. We might recognize also that even if we kind of think, if we explore our own thinking about our own thinking, okay? Right, so if we think about, like, what is my own view? So sometimes it's kind of like it's implicit. Like, we might not necessarily have, like, thought about it in these terms, but if we kind of think, we might actually have different opinions when it comes to different areas, so we should recognize that, right? Somebody who has a growth mindset might not have a growth mindset regarding everything, right? I might say, like, I'm just not a math person, but I am, right? So math, I think math is just kind of, like, stuck. It is what it is. But when it comes to some other area, some other topic, then, right, then I could do more. So, right, we should recognize that there is, like, a complexity to it, right? It's not necessarily, like, all one or the other. But we may have certain, you know, views about different topics that some we might have more of a growth perspective, that we recognize that it's actually part of a process. And one might be a fixed mindset where we kind of just think it is what it is. And that's we've peaked, you know, to the extent that we can. And part of why I brought this article is just to point out it started out in education to a large extent, and it started out in intelligence, but it's been applied in many other areas. It's been applied beyond kids to adults, to the workplace. I couldn't help myself but include this graph. If you want afterwards to spend some time trying to figure out this little chart, you're welcome to try. We're not going to go through it. It is like a three-way interaction, right? So sometimes we might think, like, right, when we're looking at research, it's like, you know, if X, then Y, and it's very simple. But there are a lot of complicated, more complex ways of looking at the world, right? And research recognizes that as well. So there's actually a three-way interaction. It's not just one to another, but it's like multiple factors that are all going on. Okay, so if you want to figure that out, we can talk about it afterwards. But the point is that this idea of growth mindset and a fixed mindset doesn't just play out by kids. It doesn't just play out in school. It doesn't just play out in intelligence. But this idea has been applied beyond those settings, and and has been found to, you know, to predict behaviors and to actually explain how people interact with the world, that there is this important aspect that people relate to the world when it comes to a mindset. Do they say that any given area, like, it is what it is, or is it malleable? Does it change? Is it possible for me to, you know, I am somewhere along this process, but just like getting here was part of a process to get here, that it continues on and I can continue to to grow as well. So those two perspectives, I think, are particularly important when we look at this story of Korach. Okay, so this idea, this whole argument that he's making, we all had revelation at Har Sinai. So how do you look at that? When we say we all were there, we all heard Hashem. So was Korach saying? Korach is saying, we did it. We all made it. That's it. We've gotten there. It, you know, we are what we are. This is the, you know, the pinnacle of our experience. So we're there. But Korach's missing something. Korach doesn't realize, or he's, again, there may be a layer. I was just like, have to give that caveat. It could be that Korach is potentially like pulling the wool over everyone else's eyes just to get them to go along with him, right? Korach has a personal vendetta and he's trying to make an argument that everyone else finds convincing. Okay, maybe that's the case. Either way, the point is, Korach's argument is like, hey, everybody, what are you listening to this guy for? We've made it. This is it. You think Moshe is so special? What do you mean Moshe is so special? We all had this. We all did it. We did it already. You came out of our Sinai, and you were there. Okay. So again, whether they realize that Moshe is that much more or not, that's all part of these layers. But this idea, Kol Ha'ida Kulam Kedoshim, everybody's holy. We've all had this experience. We all are there. And what he's missing is this idea of recognizing that if they realize that, how did they get there to begin with? How did they get there? So they got there through the 49 days. They got there through a process. They got there until they reached a certain level, and have to realize, no, this is only one level that they could have reached. This is not who they are. This is not their experience at Har Sinai is not the definition of who they are, but this was part of a process that they also continue on in the future. And the way Rav Hirsch says it over here, so Rav Hirsch says that's the problem with Korach. Ki kol ha'ida kulam were by no means kidoshim, right? He's like mixing the Hebrew and English here, right? So when he says the whole nation were by no means kidoshim already, they were anshei kodesh, right? The Torah earlier describes the Jewish people as anshei kodesh, men of a holy calling. Kidoshim yiyu, right? They have the calling to become holy. And because of that, they are an Am Kadosh LaHashem. They are hallowed to God, okay? But Kedoshim, they are not yet. We are told Kedoshim Tiyu. We're told to be holy, right? When we're described as Anshei Kodesh, it is people who can become holy. It doesn't mean you are. It is not descriptive. It is not a thing that we are. It is prescriptive. It is a thing we are supposed to do. We're supposed to be. Kikola idam kulam kedoshim, and just so that they always work themselves indefatigably up to their holy calling, so that they do not mix up what they are with what they should be. That's Korach's problem. He's messing up what they are with what they should be. He's in the terms I'm trying to borrow, right? He has this fixed perspective. We are this thing. We are kadosh. Kola idam kulam kedoshim. Everybody is holy. Why is he wrong? Because they are not that thing. They became that. The experience of Maimon Har Sinai was unique to every person because what they had is whatever they became until then, right? To sit back and be like, well, this is just who I am, right? This experience is just a revelation of what I am already. What I am. This is just the person I am, and this person experienced listening, hearing God, right? This person heard God. So if that's what they're all leaning back on, Korach is like, and that's enough. That's it. You're good. You are what you are, and what you are heard God speak at Har Sinai. But that's a mistake.
He's not allowing for the group
Exactly. Right? So there. So Korach gets up there and he's like, kulam kedoshim. And everyone's like, yeah, we are. And Moshe's message, right? The message from Hashem is, no, that, even that idea, right? So when we started, just to point out this difference, right? When we started this discussion, we said, Korach comes with an argument. He says, kulam kulam kedoshim. We all heard God at Har Sinai. So then why are you any more important than anybody else? And the argument that people were responding was, yeah, you're right. Kol ha'idav kulam kedoshim. Everybody's holy. But Moshe has to be in charge anyway because he's the one that Hashem put in charge, right? So recognizing that we're trying to push a little bit of a different idea, which is that the fact that Korach even says kol ha'idav kulam kedoshim is missing the point. The fact that he's already saying, oh, we all heard God. That means we're all holy. No. Hearing God is not the same thing. It's not the same experience for everybody. That itself depended on your growth. That itself depended on where you got yourself. To say kol ha'ida kulam kedoshim itself is a mistake. Don't think that you're already there just because of what you are right now. But you're missing out. You're missing out on the growth. I'll leave this as a question for everybody, right, to think about. What is this actually perhaps comes out in Korach's name? The name Korach, if you, what does the word Korach, what's the Shoresh, where does it actually come from? So there are actually a couple of possibilities. They actually both, there are at least two possibilities. Both of them play themselves out through the Parsha. They actually both have an expression in this Parsha. And they both have to do with being static. They both have to do with a lack of growth, because that is Korach's perspective is, we're there. We've done it. We've already, we reached, because that's who we are. We are holy people. That is what we are. He sees it as a trait. That's just what they are. They are holy people. And the response to Korach is, no, we are told kedoshim to you. We are told to become holy. We are part of a process, part of growth. In our Avodas Hashem, is to recognize we it's not that we are, but that we can be, and that is the real response to Korach, is to recognize to have this growth mindset, to realize that where we've gotten has been part of a process of growth, and that we continue to grow far into the future.